Check me out, 1-2. This is the Easter Bunny. No, it's Big Will, a.k.a. Uncle Buck. And I've given all 17 of my co-hosts the weekend off. We're doing a kind of dystopian Easter egg hunt around Staten Island that Rick Habib is piloting. We'll see if everyone survives that. But listen, it's me riding solo here on this one. Well, not completely solo. I got a special guest coming in later, man. We're going to chat about a few things. You already know who it is. But before that, I also got a few recommendos. Since I'm flying solo, you guys know I dust off a few special things. Either I hit you with some real crispy classics or, a smattering of new demos. I dusted off two real crispy classics tonight. One from a crusty old band that has a new album, and one that's just a classic band that's still kind of around, but I'm recommending one of their older albums. I'm going to get to all of that a little bit later. And I got both of these that I'm going to recommend later on cassette from Gurgling Gore Records. Please check out Gurgling Gore Records. Great label and distro. We did an interview a while back with Big Daddy Gore, who runs that label. And you could check that out. It was a while. It was almost probably a year or two ago now. But maybe got to have him back on. Shout out to Ralph from Haunted Hotel. Shout out to all the great labels that I deal with. Try to buy those physical copies off of, man. What else? The Connecticut Death Fest. That was a few weeks ago now. I don't know if I had the chance to talk about that yet, man. I'm going to talk about that with a few of the afterbirth guys, maybe, if I can. But that was what a beautiful experience, man. Great bands, Connecticut and the greater New England area scene representing. Met a lot of people, networked with a lot of people. Frozen Screams imprint was in the building. So many people that we got to get on this podcast in the new season. As they say in the Italian-American culture, we're opening up the books again here on the Heavy Hole podcast. We're starting to book interviews. We were still working through a little bit of a backlog. So sorry to our guests if it took a few weeks to get your stuff out there, man. But it's been a crazy winter, man. It's so much rain, we're underwater here on Long Island. It's tough. That's about it, man. So without further notice, man, I got no real rapport here, man. I got no guests. I'm gonna cut the bullshit for you. It's Friday. It's the first or second Friday of spring. The weather's getting nice out. Hold tight and check out this interview I did with Alexander Jones. Long overdue interview with Alexander Jones, frontman of none other than Undeath, a band that I feel. I feel a special kind of connection to in terms of the Heavy Hole podcast because they've always supported us and we've always loved that band. So it's great to have Alexander on. Let's get him on. Come on. This is Big Will from the Heavy Hole Podcast, and I'm here with none other than Alexander Jones of Undeath and Sulfuric Hatred. Welcome to the podcast, and thanks for your time.
What's going on, Will? Been a fan for a while. Very stoked to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. And like I say, it's a mutual appreciation society, man. We've always loved Undeath here on the podcast, and we've always enjoyed watching you guys work hard and continue to level up and build the band. I kind of knew a little bit about Sulfuric Hatred behind the scenes, maybe before some other people, because you got some bandmates that I might know. So I'm kind of like happy to see that popping off now, man. I want to talk about everything, but before we get to all that stuff, typical Heavy Hole podcast question: are you from a musical family, and was there anyone along the way who guided you into heavy metal and hard rock music?
Yeah, man. I mean, my parents are music fans for sure, but they're not exactly like musicians themselves, you know? But growing up, there was always music in the house. Like my parents are avid music listeners. My mom, you know, they both grew up in the kind of like late 60s, early 70s. So definitely a lot of that classic singer-songwriter era going through the house all the time, like Elton John and, you know, James Taylor, all that kind of like soft rock stuff. My mom loved that growing up. But my dad in particular, my mom loves great music, but my dad in particular, he was into all kinds of crazy shit. Like he loves, like Kraftwerk and Can and, all these wild German rock bands and the stuff that you would call, krautrock, I guess. That was always kind of his jam. And he was into, you know, the more, I guess like the dismissive term for it would be entry level, but the early punk stuff, like The Clash and Sex Pistols, Elvis Costello. So, you know, B-52s on the American side. So, yeah, lots of good music in the house growing up. And my dad had a pretty extensive record collection. So I definitely was never wanting for good stuff to listen to. But as far as anybody who got me into heavy metal and hard rock and stuff like that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it was any one specific person. Because I definitely grew up with a lot of unsupervised internet access, so I found out a lot about a lot of stuff on my own. So it's hard to kind of like put an exact point on the timeline there. But I will say, I have an uncle Bob who's my mom's brother, and he was really into like early New York hip hop, like Tribe Called Quest, Mobb Deep, stuff like that. And he was kind of the first person besides my parents that I really looked up to as a role model as far as somebody who was into cool music and who was into stuff that I wanted to get into. But nothing really in the metal or hard rock department until I was a little bit older. You know, I was kind of strictly punk and early punk and hardcore for a long time.
Okay. All right. And I know the band is associated with Rochester, New York. Undeath is. Are you originally from Rochester?
No, I mean, I lived there for a long time and probably, well, geez, I mean, let's just do the math here. I was born in Peekskill downstate, lived sort of all around that general area, like Peekskill, Hudson Valley, White Plains, Westchester, all that stuff for my early years. And then we moved up to Rochester when I was like 13, I want to say. Because my dad had the opportunity to work remotely because he's been working the same job for, you know, I think the entire time I've been alive, he's had the same job, which is crazy. But yeah, he's from upstate New York. He grew up in, he went to school at SUNY Potsdam, but he's from like, I mean, this is going to mean nothing to people who aren't familiar with the central upstate New York geography, but he's from like Horseheads and kind of like out in the middle of nowhere, like Elmira, New York. So he had the opportunity to work remotely for his job and he wanted to be closer to his family. So we decided to move to Rochester and yeah, lived there from when I was like 13 to just a year ago, really almost today, actually, which is crazy. I lived in Rochester. So I lived there for about 15 years.
Okay. Growing up, like coming of age there, what was it like getting into heavy music or, you know, punk and hardcore at first? Like, it just in terms of like getting to shows, were there bands? Were you part of other bands prior to Undeath that we might know that played original music?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we moved up to Rochester, I was, like I said, I was like 13, 14. So at that point, you know, I was really into punk and hardcore primarily. I was into Black Flag, Minor Threat, Dead Kennedys, all like the early stuff. And as far as metal goes, I mean, I was familiar with like the heavy hitters, you know, the Titans I was into that into, but I was familiar with Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, nothing too extreme, but I was into a lot of stuff. And around that same time, I was on the internet a lot. I mean, this was kind of right in the middle of the Blogspot file sharing era. So I was on Last.fm. I was on lots of, this is like a couple years later, but I was on lots of different websites just downloading music with dubious legality all the time. And it wasn't until I kind of started going to shows in Rochester that I got exposed to a lot of different stuff. And that was when I was like a freshman in high school. I had an older friend named Rory who I think he like saw me wearing a Black Flag shirt at school one day, and he was involved in the local hardcore scene and he booked shows, and he kind of took me under his wing a little bit, and he brought me to shows in Rochester. You know, he brought me to lots of local punk shows, local hardcore shows, and it was a lot of mixed bills back then. So, you know, there were metal bands on those shows too. This dude, Jared, that I still know, played in the sick metal band back then, whose name escapes me right now, of course. But yeah, and it was kind of just this trial by fire, you know, lesson in good music and good local music for most of my high school years. And around that same time, through going to shows and meeting people, I got exposed to a lot of different stuff. You know, I got exposed to all like there was a label called Death Wish. They're still around. I know Jake Bannon from Converge, that's like his label. They were really popping off around that same time. So I got really into most of the bands on that label, like Blacklisted and The Carrier and all that stuff. But on the metal side of things, I mean, I was definitely going more extreme around then too, because I was getting really into black metal. I had found Mayhem or something on the internet and started really getting into the whole Norwegian black metal scene. So it was crazy. I mean, I was getting into tons of different music all at the same time. And yeah, those were very formative years.
Okay, fair enough. And do you go back, like, how far do you go back with the guys from Undeath? You know, do you know those guys from high school? Is it like a little bit later on?
No, I actually met pretty much all of those guys through starting the band. Because, at least like for some back, I guess like some context here. When I was starting bands in Rochester, from the time I was like 16 to the time I was like, I don't know, like 24, 25, it was kind of all with the same group of people. You know, I was in a band. The first band I was ever in was a hardcore band, noise hardcore band, kind of crazy fucked up thing called Virgins. And that was with this dude, Joel, who played drums and I played guitar. And Joel's still one of my closest friends to this day. So we started that band together, and then, you know, that band didn't really last very long. We probably played like 6-7 shows, no recorded music. Right after that, I did a grind band with another group of people called Controlled by Fear. I think we did like a tape or two that was very like Napalm Death, Excruciating Terror influenced grindcore. That was when I was like probably like 18, 19 years old. You know, all like it's first band shit, you know, it's all very primitive. You're kind of just learning how to cooperate and collaborate with people and how to best utilize your own creativity. But things didn't really get serious until I started a band called Druce when I was like 20. And that was with Joel from Virgins and a couple other guys. And that was very screamo oriented. You know, it was very hard in your sleeve, very emotive kind of stuff. And that band lasted a while, and that was definitely my big education in how to be in a band. And again, yeah, that was with Joel. That was with people I had known in the Rochester scene for a while. And when that band kind of ran its course, Kyle from Undeath, it was just very serendipitous because Druce was kind of, you know, we had been a band for 4 or 5 years, maybe a little bit longer. And, you know, it was like 5 years. And things were kind of slowing down pretty gradually, and I was looking to do another band. I wanted to do something heavier. And Kyle from Undeath, one of our guitarists, he reached out to me out of the blue and asked me if I had any interest in singing for a death metal band. And yeah, starting that band with him is how I met all of the guys in Undeath. So, which is kind of perfect because there's no like friendship baggage in that band. You know, like when you start a band with people that you've known for years and you just know all like the painful shit about each other, and it can just get kind of awkward. And none of that with Undeath. We all met each other through starting a band, so it's been kind of this perfect relationship that we've been very lucky to have.
Wow, that's, you know, that's two good points maybe for younger people who haven't been in a lot of bands. And I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm you know, you got my wheels spinning here. the idea that you may have to be in a few different bands for years before you kind of figure out where you sit with things, what your strengths are, what kind of people you need, where you want to go with it. You know what I mean? And then the other thing you just said was that friendship baggage. I mean, you know, like there is, you know, look, I'm in bands with, you know, some of the Reeking Aura guys. I've literally known Tom from Reeking Aura since we were like 12 years old and we're both over 40. You know what I mean? Like, and I cherish being in a band with that guy. But on the flip, there is an important quality, what you said, no baggage. You know what I mean? Like, there are other bandmates and other bands I've been in and other things I've experienced in the past where sometimes a clean start is better for the creative environment, you know, for whatever reason. So that's two good things to keep in mind there, you know, honestly.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I love the guys in Drew's so much. Like, those are, you know, Ryan and Joe and Joel, the other three guys in the band. Those are three of my favorite people in the whole world. But it was one of those relationships where, you know, we all knew each other. We all had gone to shows with each other for years before the band even started. And so you're going into it kind of like expecting certain things from each other. You're expecting one another to act a certain way and to like and dislike the things that you've known them to like and dislike for the entire time that you've been friends. So, you know, when people, and you also, like, on top of that, you're so young too. I mean, I was maybe like 19, 20 when we started that band, and the other guys were 23, 24. You know, I think Joel's probably the oldest. He was like 25 at the time, maybe. So you still were kids pretty much. And you do a lot of growing in those years. And it's natural that you kind of chafe against each other a little bit, because when somebody develops new interests, or maybe they don't really want to be in a band anymore, maybe they want to like make solo music, or maybe they want to be like a heavier band or a softer band or whatever, you kind of look at them askance, like they're somehow betraying your trust or whatever. But it's not like that at all. It's just the fact that you're young and you're growing up, and you're not used to seeing your friends grow up around you. And it can be tough to kind of to process, I guess. But again, like, there was definitely some hard feelings when the band started to slow down, but I love those guys tremendously. They're some of my best friends in the world. But as far as it pertains to Undeath, that's why it was so refreshing. Exactly like you said, is that it was just a clean slate. I had never been in a band with any of those guys before. I was somewhat familiar with Kyle. I mean, I think I had met him like once before we started the band. Didn't know anybody else. So it was cool. It was cool just to like meet a group of people. And the only common relationship that you have is you're all starting this thing together. So it's a nice bedrock to build a relationship off of.
Yeah, and you guys have certainly built it. I want to talk about some of the moves you guys. I know you guys did a lot this year, and you have upcoming plans. But when you guys were first starting out in that demo era, I want to talk a little bit about because you guys were getting out there and playing shows. You've always had a mind for social media and promoting yourselves and pushing yourselves. You've never taken the band. Well, I'll say you haven't been afraid to have a lighthearted approach with certain merch and social media. You know what I mean? Yeah. And all that speaks to where the band is today. Can you take us through, like, what was this all when you guys were sitting in the basement or sitting in the rehearsal room back in the demo day? Were you saying, we got to push this? This is what it is. Or over time, did you kind of pick a momentum and say, hey, we got something here?
That's a great question. I mean, it was definitely more of the latter for sure. But that's not to say we weren't always ambitious. You know, I guess the only time that I can think of that, you know, in that Undeath's been around that we haven't kind of actively tried to push it as hard as we could would be the very beginning, like the very beginning. I mean, before we even had the first demo out, because none of us really knew what it was yet. Not to say that Undeath is this massive commercial entity, but we didn't think, you know, we didn't know if we had any juice. We didn't really know what to expect at that point. We didn't have any releases. You know, we were just playing a couple shows around Rochester, just the three of us. I mean, it was just Kyle on guitar, Matt on drums, and me doing vocals. That was it. That was the band for like a year and a half. So, and, you know, I was still doing Drew's. Matt was in another band in Rochester. I think Kyle was just coming off of doing a different band. So Undeath wasn't like all of our priorities at that point. You know, I kind of envisioned it as my Drew side band when I first started. But then when we put the first demo out, and you know, we did that with Caligari, and it kind of got traction pretty fast. And then we did the next demo, Sentient Autolysis, kind of right off the heels of that. You know, things picked up steam pretty quick, and you know, we were getting show offers for places to play out of state, you know, in Massachusetts, and you know, in state down the city, and people that we, you know, bands that we admired and respected were reaching out to us and telling us that they loved what we were doing. You know, we heard from like Cerebral Rod and Fetid and kind of like the other bands that were coming up around the same time as us, like Frozen Soul and Sang with Sugabog. You know, we were just making friends, and people were telling us that they were into what we were doing. So that's kind of when we realized, oh shit, maybe we got something here, you know? So it was kind of, it was around that second demo coming out that I think we started to actually like really take the band seriously as a quasi full-time thing and try to push it as hard as we could.
Yeah, and just for the listeners, if people don't realize, we did interview your guitarist, Kyle Beam, back in 2021 already. I can't believe how time flies.
Yeah.
So people can go back and check that out for a little bit of a time capsule in Undeath history. So was there, let me ask you this, was there a show, was there a tour, was there, you know, a moment where you looked at this thing and you said, you know, all right, you know, I mean, I'm not asking it for like a we have arrived moment or something, but just, you know, you go, I know what it's like to be in bands, you're playing clubs, you go out, you go driving out to the city on a Monday night, whatever, you're opening up the whole show for three people, there's no one there, and then you get to that point where you realize, wow, some of these kids know the songs, some of these people are here for us. Was there a specific show, tour, where you kind of like had that click for you?
Yeah, I can kind of think of two examples of that. You know, I remember one of the first shows we ever played, it was like our fifth or sixth show ever, maybe, was down in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Bazaar, which has closed since.
Yeah.
And we had just, I think we were about to put out Sentient Autolysis, the second demo. So that wasn't even out yet. And we were on our way down to, it was the show we were opening, I think, it's funny, it was Un and Undeath, but the doom metal band Un was headlining, and then Wormwitch was also playing, and then we were opening. And we just got asked to hop on the show by the kid who was booking it, and we said, sure, and we drove down from Rochester, and on the way down, Trevor Sternad from Black Dahlia Murder, you know, rest in peace,
yeah,
he reached out to us, he shot us a DM, and he just said, hey, you know, I'll see you guys at the show tonight. And we kind of thought he was fucking with us. You know, we were like, there's no way this dude is actually going to come and watch our band play. Like, we aren't shit. Like, who would do that? And we rolled to the show and we're loading in gear, and there he is. You know, he just was downstairs before doors, just hanging out with people. And we were all kind of starstruck by that because, you know, he was like a celebrity to us. You know, we're big Black Dahlia heads. And that was just crazy that not only was he there in the flesh, like this person that we respected and admired as a musician and a person, but also like he came out to the show to support us and support this band that had one demo and a handful of shows under their belt. And that was just huge for us. And we linked up with him, and that was great. So that was definitely like the first big inkling, I guess, that I had that maybe things could go pretty well for our band. But then, you know, not long after that, COVID happened.
Yeah.
And things locked down, and you know, we kind of had some tentative touring plans. We were kind of talking about doing shows with Boba Philic from North Dakota. We ultimately ended up did doing shows with them later on, but all these plans that we had went out the window, and we just said, all right, whatever, we'll just pivot and focus on just finishing up our record. And we did the full length, the first one, Legions of a Different Kind, and that came out in 2021, and or was it 2020? I can't even remember, but it was one of the two.
I got 2020 in my notes, but who's counting?
Yeah, it was 2020. Yeah. The years are just sliding by at this point.
I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, we put out that record, and it got a lot of good press, and our expectation was just that we hoped that our friends and our girlfriends or whatever liked it. It ended up doing way better than we thought it would. And in that same time frame, when things were kind of slowing down in 2021 and like lockdowns were, and things were getting lifted and shows were starting to gradually come back, we got an offer to open for Black Dahlia Murder.
Yeah.
On a U.S. tour with them and a bunch of other bands. And, we said, yeah, we jumped at the opportunity. And I don't know what we were expecting besides just the opportunity to go out and play some shows. None of us had ever done a tour that extensively before, but we had really leveled up in that time frame. We had brought on a bassist and a second guitarist. So we were ready. We were chomping at the bit to get out there. And that tour is the second example I can think of things kind of feeling like, us feeling like we had something, because we would go out every night and play to 1,000, 1,200 people, these massive shows that, the vast majority of them had no idea who we were. But without fail, every night, I would be hanging out by the merch table and some dude would come up to us and tell us that we reminded him of fucking Cannibal Corpse or Carcass or whatever. And he wasn't expecting to become a fan of any new bands that night, but we won them over, and that just happened over and over and over again. And by like the 6 or 7 instance of somebody just being so bug-eyed at the set we had just done and telling us how sick they thought we were, kind of made me realize, like, okay, well, maybe we should start taking this thing pretty seriously. We should do some more tours after this one.
What's funny is I had a very similar experience, thanks to Trevor Sternad. I can't claim that I was like his best friend or particularly great friends with him. I just was another person that he made feel like an old friend when you were around him. He was a very warm, friendly guy. Just like everyone paints the picture of him, that's who the guy was. And when he was living in Brooklyn and coming to shows in New York City frequently, that way I have some great memories seeing him around at those times. And prior to that, in 2014, a band I was in had the opportunity. We were able to go on a national, not our first, but our biggest national tour supporting Black Dahlia Murder and Goat Whore and Entheos at the time. And a lot of that was probably off the strength of Trevor advocating for us to be on that tour, man. So I have similar high praise and gratitude for that guy. Rest in peace, man. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, man. I mean, he was a huge advocate for all kinds of dope underground metal. And that's something I think a lot of people sincerely miss about him. And, myself included, just the way he put bands on. And, we were no exception. I like you said, with your situation, I think for us too, the only reason we really, or at least one of the biggest reasons we were able to get on that Black Dahlia Murder tour was because Trevor advocated for us and he wanted to put us on. And at that point, respectfully, we had no business being on that tour. We were a band for about 2 years. We had been a 3-piece with no bass, no second guitar for a year and a half of those 2 years. And by the time we had played the first show on that Black Dahlia Murder tour, I think we had like 10 or 11 shows under our belt, Yeah. So like we weren't these road seasoned veterans who were going to be able to pull our weight right out of the gate. We had to learn as we went, and it was definitely a learning experience, just the kind of figuring out the mechanizations of a tour of that size and all the stuff that you have to do and all the responsibilities you kind of have to undertake and the way you have to act and behave on a day-to-day basis. It was cool. It was cool just kind of learning all that stuff on the fly and shooting from the hip. And we wouldn't have been able to be in a position like that if it wasn't for somebody like Trevor. And that was huge. And after that tour, none of us really looked back.
Yeah, it's funny because you're just bringing back so many memories of what, it's like you go on these big package tours and you learn about, early load-in times and the kind of etiquette of dealing with tour managers and loading in and loading out and sound checking. And just, there's a lot, there's a level of professionalism that isn't necessarily required if you're just doing a DIY you know, a bar tour. You know what I mean? And I never, I was well into my 30s before I ever experienced that and realized that part of the scene, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we, like, all the shows we had played at that point, up until that point, Undeath and otherwise, had all been just at bars, at DIY spaces, at, like, galleries, you know? So it was like, you show up an hour before doors.
Yeah.
You, like, maybe, that's kind of early, like, you throw all your shit in there, you line check right before your set, and that's the night. And then if you're lucky, you get paid, and that's it. So rolling up to the Black Dahlia Murder tour, you know, it's like load-ins are at, I don't even remember what it was, like two or three. It was earlier than that. It was like 2:30 every day. You know, we had an hour sound check, which was just crazy. I don't think we'd ever even sound checked before that point. And all of a sudden we were sound checking for an hour every night. And yeah, like learning how to not deal with, but how to navigate like relationships with tour managers and stuff, how to show up on time and be respectful, how to give everybody enough space, but also not be like the weird, cold, distant band that doesn't want to talk to anybody. You know, it's all a really fine balancing act. And it was cool doing that tour because we kind of got to get our legs under us as we were running full sprint, you know? But I mean, I remember on that tour, quick little anecdote, just to like demonstrate how green we were to all of this shit. The first show of the tour, we were playing in Chicago, and we were sharing a green room with Rivers of Nile, and like we did most shows of that tour. And those guys were, I mean, they're pros. You know, they at that point have been touring for probably like close to 10 years. So this is all old hat to them. And we're rolling up, we're all wide-eyed and drooling and just like acting like total idiots probably. And I remember in the green room, they had a laminated sign that had our logo on it. You know, it's like like green room, Rivers of Nile, Undeath. And it was just a little laminated piece of paper with our logo on it. And we were freaking out about that. Because we were like, holy shit, there's a piece of paper with our logo on it and it's laminated. This is crazy. So we took it and we threw it in the van. And we show up to the next show, and there's another one. I don't remember what the next show was, like Minneapolis or something, or Grand Rapids. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. But there's another one at the green room, and we took that one, too. We're like, holy shit, we're going to have like 30 of these by the end of this tour. This is amazing. And then we show up to the next show, and before we could even get to the green room, Black Dahlia Murder's TM cornered us. And he was like, you guys have to stop taking my fucking laminates, because I can only make so many of these things, and it's going to start costing me a fortune. And he was like, I think he was busting our balls, but he was like, I think I'm going to like start charging you guys for these things. And we didn't realize that you're not supposed to take those. Like, that's just, the tour manager reuses the same one over and over and over. So we were clueless. We were completely clueless, but we were just so hyped that something as professional as a laminated piece of paper with our logo on it was there, you know?
It's definitely a milestone of being in a band. You know, like after you see the first time you see your logo on a flyer, you know, it's kind of like the next step. One thing you were talking about sprinting before. One thing people don't realize, in these big tours, there's usually one or two bands that have are big enough to have a driver, maybe even a bus. But sometimes the opening bands, it's just the four or five guys that are performing every night, also driving every day, trying to play catch up with the tour bus that's driving while the mainline, where the headlining band is asleep in the back, catching up on Z. So it's a grueling, pay your dues experience for bands. I'm not begrudging any of it. And, you know, what Black Dahlia Murder and what Trevor did for me, many years ago was a great opportunity, and I was happy to have it, man. You just brought back some memories, that's all. And did they, in specific, because I know, you know, I've always watched, you know, what they have and continue to do with their marketing and their merchandising. Did they affect how you guys look at merchandising and social media at all?
That's a good question. I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, I think they kind of, you know, we rolled into that tour knowing that we, at least in the merch department, we had to kind of step it up. because at that point we were printing everything, not ourselves, but we were using like local to Rochester screen printers, like just people that we knew to make our merch. And we knew that wasn't going to be feasible for a tour like that. So we had a bunch of different designs and a bunch of different merch made, and it was a pretty hefty bill. But yeah, like it wasn't so much Dahlia specifically as it was like the magnitude and of the tour and the seriousness of it. We knew we had to kind of step our game up a little bit.
Yeah, man. And you definitely, like I said before, you guys haven't been afraid to have a little bit more of a lighthearted approach and a definitely a Rochester, New York centered approach with some of the merch you made over the years.
Yeah.
You guys ended up having your own strain of weed, no?
Yeah, we did.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so that's a pretty recent development. So my fiance works for a couple different like weed companies, pretty much. It's the easiest way to describe it. The main company that she works for, I think, is called New York Hemp Oil. And there's a bunch of different brands beneath that, like consumer-facing brands. So there's the flower, which is in vapes and stuff like that, which is all under a brand called Flores Farms. And then there's the concentrates, like the stuff that you dab in the wax and shit like that, under this brand Blotter. And I had pitched to her one day, I was like, we should do some undeath weed, like that'd be funny. And I was not expecting her to take it seriously at all. You know, I had just kind of thrown it out there as a joke. And then like a week later, she came up to me and told me that, you know, she had presented that to her boss at Blotter and he loved it. And the next thing I know, I'm talking to him and we're, you know, he's sending me like strain samples of different concentrates to dab and see which one I would want to use for whatever the undeath dab turned out being. And yeah, and it came together really fast, and it ended up being, I think it's a variation or it's a derivative of a strain called Bog Dog. Maybe for all like the weed strain archivalists out there, that'll mean something to them. It doesn't really mean a lot to me, but I know that it's really good and it gets you insanely stoned. So I was hyped on that. And yeah, and when we just put out that concentrate with them, we called it Necropolis, kind of as a Manila Road homage. Doesn't really have anything to do with death metal or undeath, but we just listened to a lot of Crystal Logic in the van. So that seemed obvious. And then it seemed like a cool name for weed too. And yeah, I think it's been doing well. I mean, I do some courier stuff for her a lot of the time. I drive a lot of orders down to the city and around upstate New York. And I've been delivering a lot of Necropolis. So somebody's buying it.
Yeah, I want to say, because we have two legal rec dispensaries here on Long Island, and yep. One is fairly new, one's been open for a while. I want to say, I think I've seen you guys undeath weed in the one down here on Long Island at one point. I remember, that's why I wanted to ask you about that. I remember reading about that.
Yeah, I know there's one on Long Island called Strain Stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty sure we've delivered stuff there before.
Okay.
Stuff's going.
That would be where. Yeah. I read about it on their website, man. That allegedly, man. All right. So you guys had a busy year, man. You went a lot of places where weed's legal, and a lot of places where it's not legal, and you went some places where they mix it with tobacco. I read on your IG too, man. What? Yeah. No, not for me either, bro. Not for me either, man. What un-American? What? Tell me about your year, because I know that you went to like the United Kingdom three times. You did your first Irish show. You guys did a big tour with Fit for an Autopsy, Exodus, Darkest Hour. Take me through the year a little bit.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was definitely like our busiest year yet, show wise. I mean, I kind of started all the way back in late 2022, because we did a co-headlining tour with 200 Stab Wounds. We went out with them. That was like 6-7 weeks. It was a long one. Got back from that just in time for the holidays in 2022. And then we had like 3 weeks off, and then we were off to, I think we went to the UK. No, we went to Australia first. No, I'm sorry, that was later. So we got back from that tour. January of 2023, we went to the UK for the first time. We did a week of shows then. And then that rolled right into another tour that we did. It was like a package tour that Dire Is Murder headlined. And I think Kublai Khan was on it. And we were opening that one. Or no, we weren't. We were the third band on that tour. So we did that. That was another 5 weeks. Got home from that, had like 3 days off. And then we immediately went to Australia. And we played two shows down there with Gate Creeper. It's a long way to travel for two shows. But the offer was just... it was there, and we said, fuck it, let's just do it. So we went to Australia. That was amazing. And then we were home, and we were home for a little bit. Finally had some time off. I mean, that was like, man, like two and a half months straight of touring, pretty much. And then we had a little time off, and then in the summer, we went to Europe in like June or July, I want to say. And that wasn't a very long stretch, but that was just for a couple of fests. That was the first time doing the whole, like, UK festival thing, you know. So we played a couple fests over there. We played Download, which was huge. That's like the most people we've ever played to by far. Played Copenhagen in Copenhagen, played Into the Grave Fest, which is in the Netherlands. I think it's in Leeuwarden. We were all over the place, and we played some club shows in between. So that was the second time we had been to the UK. And then we were home for a while. Had some time off, played some fests in between, played like Decibel Metal and Beer Fest in April, played, I guess that was before Europe, played New England Metal and Hardcore Fest, played Hell in the Harbor in Baltimore. And then we did all that shit. And then getting towards the end here, I think in October, I want to say it was October, we went to the UK again. This is the third time with Municipal Waste and Gel. And that was great. That was for about 2 weeks. Came back home. We were home for about a week. And then we flew right back. And we played Damnation Fest in Manchester. I'm really impressed with my recall ability right now.
You didn't smoke that Necropolis weed before the interview, I could tell.
No, I went into the hole sober. Came back from Damnation Fest in Manchester, and then I think we had like 2 weeks off maybe, and then that rolled right into a tour that we did. It was Exodus and Fit for an Autopsy co-headlining, Darkest Hour, and Us opening. And that was in November, December of last year. And that was that. And now we are pretty much off until the summer, and we're gonna start recording our next album next week.
Beautiful. That's a lot, dude.
Yeah,
it's definitely something to be proud of, but it's also hard work that's got to take a toll on you. When you come home, do you feel a little shell-shocked after doing all that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And you know, the trick that I've kind of found is it's important for me to get back into my regular, like, home life routine as fast as possible, you know? So it's like, as much as the temptation is there to get home from the last day of tour and to leave your suitcase packed and just kind of like lie in bed for the next 3 days and not do fucking anything, what I need to do to kind of maintain a sense, like a rhythm and a sanity in my day-to-day life, is I need to just like get right back to it. So I get home, you know, for example, on the last day of the Exodus tour, we played in Pittsburgh or New Kensington. Technically it's New Kensington, but whatever. Drove home from that overnight, got home at like 6 a.m. And then I, you know, slept for 8 or 9 hours, got a nice long sleep. Then I woke up, immediately started doing my laundry, started like letting the people that I work for at home know that I'm back in town. I'm ready to do like driving and courier stuff. So it's just like getting right back into it. I can't linger for too long. Otherwise I start to feel insane. I'm existing in this like space, this liminal space in between worlds, and I can't do that. It makes me go crazy. But yeah, it's definitely hard work. I mean, this past year was the most we had ever done on the road. I mean, we were gone for a long time. I think we played like, if not 100, then close to 100 shows last year, which is just nuts for us. And I think this year will be a little bit lighter schedule wise, at least for most of it. But yeah, I mean, it's a sickness, you know. You put the shit down on paper, like the actual hard numbers and logistics of all of it. And when you look at it, it's like, okay, you're going to be traveling around in a van with a bunch of dudes, and you're all going to be inhaling each other's farts all day long. And then you get to a show and you frantically load everything in, and then you wait around forever, and then you play a set. You know, you get paid a little bit of money, and then, you know, just enough to cover your gas and food, and you get like a $10 per diem or whatever, and that's enough for your Taco Bell for the night. And then it's on to the next one, and you do that for 28, 32 sleepless nights. And, you know, I think if you were going to show that to any rational person, they would go, well, why the fuck are you doing this to yourself? But
yeah.
It's like, if you know, you know. You just can't live without it. And I think that's how everybody in the band is.
Yeah, it's an addiction. And that life on the road is usually what kind of separates people in the band sometimes. I'm not saying you guys, but, you know, a lot of times bands will come back from those big road trips, and some guys will say, this isn't for me, and some guys will say, I want to do this till I can't do it anymore. You know what I mean?
Man.
It's polarizing.
And you know, like, with us, it happens every time we do an extensive tour, like a 4, 5, 6 week long one. I mean, the last show, we can't wait to get home. Yeah. You know, all of us, we're having a great time, but we're all sitting in the green room or in the van or whatever talking about how much we can't wait for this tour to be over. Like, how much we can't wait to go home. And it's all in good spirits. We're not talking shit. But when you get to the finish line, it's like, man, I don't want to think about death metal again for a little while. But then you're home for a week and you want to get right back in there and do another 4 weeks. You know, that's how it is.
Yeah, there's always two sides to it, man. Pros and cons. Hearing you speak about all that, you played a variety of different places with a variety of different bands. Like, you guys in Outer Heaven make sense. You know, two bands,
yep.
Modern death metal bands. I can see you guys sharing a lot of audience members. But Fit for an Autopsy, Exodus, Darkest Hour. You mentioned Gel and Municipal Waste. All great bands, respectfully, but all bands that are bringing a completely different kind of subset from the scene to the table. Do you think that, like, it's at the point now where kids really don't care? There's no variation. You know, do you see in certain areas, do people still really care about that? Or, you know, like, what's the climate out there in terms of that? Is that accepted? Is it not accepted? Is it different where you go?
That's an excellent question. I mean, it's tough to say, you know, because I think about the people that come to our shows to see us, and I don't really know what that person looks like, you know. I keep thinking I have it down, but I'm always surprised. You know, when the band started, I kind of thought we were strictly for the patch vest, you know, metal lifer guys, but then we started getting out there and playing more shows and see a lot of those people, but then you also see a lot of like the kickboxing hardcore kids. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe this is our crowd. And then play some more, and now there's both of those groups, but now there's also like the old heads are starting to come around, and yeah, you know, because we remind them of bands that they liked back in the day. So I don't know. I think that there's definitely way more crossover than there used to be. But I definitely think there's still some division. You know, I think there's some bands that are going to do really well in some scenes and not very well in others. You know, when we did, we had a great time on the, I mean, we have a great time wherever we go, but we had a great time on the Exodus tour, the Fit for an Autopsy one, because it was a really cool mix of like, beat down deathcore people and thrash metal old heads, and
yeah,
you know, it's kind of this beautiful little synergy of all these different little clicky scenes coming together. And So that was cool. I feel like we had a great reception on that tour, but, and this is not to disparage anybody involved in this tour or anybody who came to any of those shows, but I feel like the experience we had on the Thy Artist Murder tour that we did was a little different because we played some great shows on that one, but that was definitely a way more like, deathcore, more breakdown, negative oriented tour. And you kind of saw that with some of the responses we were getting. People didn't really know what to make of a death metal band with a singer who smiles on stage the entire time. You know, so it can go both ways. And I think the important thing at the end of all of that is we see all different kinds of kids at shows these days. And I don't really know if there is like just somebody out there who only listens to one thing specifically. And if that person exists, then I don't think they go to shows.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the black metal guys. There's a lot of black metal guys that don't leave the house, man, but we love them anyway. all right, man. I appreciate the insight. With that being said, can you reveal some of your guys' plans coming up for 2024 when you do come off of a break?
Yeah, man. I mean, we're recording our new album. It starts next week. We're going to be down in Nashville doing that for probably 3-4 weeks. So I'm excited to finally get that done. That's been in the works for a very long time. That'll be out later this year. I'm not really sure when at this point. I'm shooting for the early fall, so hopefully we'll have it out by September, October, something like that, maybe a little earlier. And then touring wise, we're going out in the summer on a tour that should be announced pretty soon. That's going to be West Coast US, kind of like 2-3 weeks of shows with some cool bands. We're all stoked about that. Yeah, and then we got a bunch of stuff kind of tentatively being plotted for the fall, winter to kind of coincide with the album coming out. Some headlining stuff for sure in the U.S. Going to try to go over to Europe again. You know, my big goal is I want to get over to Australia and do more shows, not just two. And then while we're out there on that side of the world, would love to go to Japan and Southeast Asia and all that stuff too while we're out there. So that's definitely something we're looking into right now. And yeah, I think that about covers it at the moment.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough. You mentioned that part of the world. You remind me, you wrote an article about anime for a popular metal website, respectfully. Right? Didn't you? I saw that on your IG.
Yeah, I did.
Well, I mean, that's a kind of media that you're fairly invested in, no?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I just laugh because it's always funny to talk about this because it's such like a niche little interest that I have.
I see it as something that's adjacent to underground metal culture in this internet age. It's, you know, it's another subculture. It's another fandom. It's it's a million-dollar industry. It's probably bigger than death metal. But
I would say certainly bigger than death metal.
Yeah, I mean, respect. Shout out to Cannibal Corpse. I'm not talking shit. I'm just saying. But
they're not making anime money.
Yeah. No, nobody is. But that was what was the metal website that you wrote the article for? Do you remember? I'm sorry.
Oh my god, this is so disrespectful. I honestly don't remember.
It was a while back.
Off the top of my head.
It's all right. People can follow you on IG, man. That's where I got it off. It was probably from a year or two ago too.
Yeah, I remember how that came about. I remember the kid who was pitching the series to his editor just hit me up and asked me if I would have any interest in writing that, and then we did a quick interview, and that was that. But yeah, I can't remember for the life of me what that was for. But it was fun. I had a good time.
Fair enough, man. We'll let that be, man. I remember seeing that and taking the note, man. I imagine a fair amount of the listeners are also involved in that type of media as well, man. Not something I'm too familiar with. I'd embarrass myself because I only know a few of the more like surface level movies from back, and you know, Fist of the North Star and that sort of thing, man. You know, that was hot when I was a teenager. Yeah. I remember. I've been going through my DVDs. I actually found that. I found Vampire Hunter D. So I have like a couple of cool ones from back when I was in the band Biolich. Some of those guys were a little bit more involved in that, but that was a long time ago, man. Regardless, though, you guys, you said you're going down to Tennessee to record the album. That's the first time you're recording there, no?
Yeah, we're recording with Mark Lewis at his studio down there. He's done a bunch of Black Dahlia stuff. He did Skeletal Domain, the Cannibal Corpse record. He's done a bunch of shit that we enjoy the production on. So that was the guy that we sought out, and he was into it. So, you know, he came out and saw us at a show that we played in Birmingham. And that I was worried that was going to be a disaster because that was towards the end of that Thyroidist Murder tour, and my mental state was at just about empty, and also my voice was just completely shot. So we did that show and he was watching it, and I was like, fuck, this guy's not going to want to record our album at all. But he was into it, and yeah, we're going to track it with him.
For some reason, Tennessee happens to, for some reason, I always been playing in Tennessee with my bands. Like I was like the year before last, it was like one of my projects played in Tennessee. And then a week later I was back in Tennessee doing two shows, but I've never had a bad show or a bad experience down there either. It's a great music culture, much beyond country music, which may be the stereotype, but there's a great culture for just underground music and independent music in general, down there. You know, especially in Nashville, but even we were in Knoxville, I want to say, and you know, it was really cool, man. You know, the really cool places out there, kind of, you know, outside of the East Coast where I'm comfortable, you know.
Yeah, Nashville's cool. I mean, I love playing down there. I love being down there. We were down there for like a week late last year to do pre-pro with Mark, which is the first time any of us have ever done pre-production on a record. So that was a cool experience. But yeah, it's just a good vibe down there, especially coming from the East Coast. Like people are just a little bit nicer, a little bit. I don't know, but things just move a little slower down there, and I like that change of pace.
Yeah, dude, it's a real thing, man. That's one thing you learned too. Had you traveled the country much prior to your tours with Undeath?
No, I mean, I like with Druce, we had, I think the longest tour we ever did was like a week, and that was down to, it was supposed to be down to Florida, but our van, the front axle snapped, so we ended up shilling out all the money we had to get back home. So we only made it as far as Charleston, South Carolina, I believe. But personally, like outside of band stuff, I mean, I had never been to California. I'd never really been to the West Coast at all, except when I was a kid, my parents and I, we took a family vacation to Seattle. And I'd been to Canada a few times, like Ontario, Toronto. But yeah, never been to California, never been to Texas, never been pretty much anywhere past Ohio in my life. So that first Undeath tour that we did with Black Dahlia Murder was the first time I'd been to a lot of different places.
Yeah. Well, I just get nostalgic when I hear that, cause I'm another person who owes something similar to Black Dahlia Murder, man, and to Trevor. So that's great to hear. With that being said, dude, one more thing we got to talk about is this Sulfuric Hatred record that just came out. The self-titled album on Sentient Rune Records. You guys did put out a demo in 2022, 2023. The self-titled album came out. That's with former guest of the show, Liam McMahon. And my, hasn't been on the show in a while because he's so busy, but my sometimes co-host and sometimes bandmate, Sam Sherrick. I don't know. Am I allowed to say that? Are those guys under like pseudonyms with that band? Or I don't know. All right, cool, man. I don't want
shit's all on the metal archives. You
know, I didn't want to spill the beans. Because I kind of knew that one because I know those guys and I heard a little bit about it. Tell me about take me a little bit about that because you're really busy with Undeath. You got enough going on. Your passport's getting stamped left and right. Where do you have the time to come up with this and take us through that a little bit?
Yeah, man. I mean, I've always, not always, but I've been into the, I guess what you would call war metal, like that whole bestial side of metal for a while. Bands like Revenge and Conqueror, I think Adversarial is another big one. You know, shit like that, stuff that's just very fast and noisy and kind of, I don't want to say one-dimensional because it's not, but that whole world of music I've been into for a while. I just think it's really cool, and it's just fucking sick. And I wanted to do a band like that for a minute and tried a couple different things with a couple different people locally, and things just weren't really coalescing in a way that I was stoked about. And I knew Liam, you know, I knew Liam through Undeath. We had played a show with his old band Path to War in DC on one of our very first tours. So he was a homie, and we were just talking on Discord or something. I mean, this is like the least war metal origin story imaginable. Like, we were just talking on Discord or some shit one day, and I just told him how badly I wanted to start a band that sounded like all those bands I listed. And he was just like, all right, hold on. Like, I got these riffs. And within a day, he had kind of sent me a bunch of different stuff he was working on that he had been working on for a little bit. And he's like, do you want to do vocals over this kind of stuff? And I loved it. I said, absolutely. So we got that first demo together. You know, he recorded all the guitars and bass and drums on it. You know, he programmed the drums on it. I recorded all the vocals in my old apartment. And that was that. And then for the LP, I mean, he wrote everything. I recorded all the vocals at home again. But then when we sent it to Sentient Ruin to see if they would put it out, Mattia, the guy who runs the label, his stipulation was we had to have real drums on it because he just hated the program drums so much, which yeah. Can't blame him for.
I gotta respect so we that. Like, I gotta respect that.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's OS. So we were like, all right, who do we know who's sick who would drum over this shit? And Sam was the first guy both of us thought of. So we hit him up, and he's the man of a million bands. I mean, the man can you need a reliable, sick, extreme metal drummer to blast over your shit. And you live on the Eastern Seaboard, that's the guy you reach out to. So
yeah,
he was down. He tracked all of it in like 2 days. And that was that. And we sent the record to Will Killingsworth to get it mastered. And Sentient Ruin put it out. And that was cool, man. It was it's definitely the least I've been like, it sounds like I didn't have any involvement in it. But like with every other band I've ever been in, like my fingers are in the pot the entire time. You know, it's like I want to know what everything's doing, who's doing what's happening next. But with Sulfuric Hatred, it was like it's Liam's music, and I'm just happy to be involved. So kind of took a backseat with a lot of the decision making with that one, and I'm stoked on it. I'm fucking stoked that it came out the way that it did. And Sentient Ruin is a label that I love and I've been a fan of for a few years now, so I was really hyped that he wanted to put it out. And yeah, that's the band in a nutshell, pretty much.
Awesome. Yeah. Cause it is, it's definitely something the listeners should check out. Given the process of it coming together and the fact you guys all live in different areas, I mean, is there any ambition to play live with that band, or are you guys just kind of leaving it in that studio project realm for now?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, we've talked about it before and we kind of go back and forth on it. Like there's definitely a big part of me that wants, I mean, it's too late now because the band has like an Instagram and all this shit, but there's a part of me that wants that band to be the band that has like no social media presence whatsoever. You know, it's just not concerned with playing live at all. And we just record some new music every couple of years, and that's that. You know, I've never been in a band like that before, so I'd love it if we could do that. But I know the other, like Liam's talked about wanting to play live before. I know Sam has too. I certainly wouldn't be opposed, but I think it needs to be like the right environment, I guess. Not, I don't want to sound too artsy fartsy about it because it's really not like that, but it would have to be a special kind of occasion, I guess, for me to want to play live. I don't want to play live just because.
Well, fair enough. And with certain projects, that's how it has to be. And you certainly got enough going on with Undeath. Speaking of which, we'll give you the opportunity to plug and promote anything else that we may have failed to bring up or mention at the end. But as we wind down, I'm going to get into the typical Heavy Hole podcast closing out question and ask you to recommend one older and one newer piece of music, demo, album, EP, metal, any other genre, whatever it is. No strict rules about the date, what's old, what's new, just something from back in the day and something a little more recent.
Hell yeah. Well, I will preface this by saying, Will, I've been a fan of the Heavy Hole since pretty much the very beginning. And I remember, not to editorialize too much here, but I would be remiss not to say this. When I was working at my old job, when Undeath was first starting out, I worked at a law firm as a pretty much like a glorified secretary. And I used to listen to the Heavy Hole all the time. And I would always think about what my recommendations were going to be if I ever went on the show. So with that in mind, I've had probably 3-4 years to think about this.
Wow.
And the result is I have two older albums and two newer ones. Can I bend the rules a little bit?
Take the liberty. Cause like I told you behind the scenes, when we were messaging each other, it's crazy it took this long. And it's getting redundant for me to say at this point because I say it every episode, but I got such a list of people I'm trying to get on the show, and it's just I'm a one-man operation. So I appreciate you making the time, and I'm sorry it took this long, and do as many recommendations as you need to get out of your system.
Oh, my God, bro. No apology necessary. Seriously, I'm honored to be here at all. But, yeah, old recommendations first. First one I want to recommend – I wrote them down, too, because I didn't want to forget – I want to recommend an album called Behind the Realms of Madness by Sacrilege. They're more doom metal now, but British crust metal kind of band. This album came out in 85, which is crazy because it sounds so like fresh and so current in the way that it incorporates the crust punk stuff with the metal shit, and it's like a little bit of Venom, a little bit of Disclose, a little bit of more like thrashy stuff thrown in there too. So just a fucking sick record. It's their debut album, Behind the Realms of Madness. It's in my mind one of the best like crust adjacent albums ever, so people definitely go check that out. And then my other old one, I'm going to recommend In on the Kill Taker by Fugazi, which is a decisively not metal album, but I just feel like the youth these days don't listen to enough Fugazi. And I feel like culture as a whole is suffering as a result. So I'm going to recommend In on the Kill Taker. Love that record. One of the best. I mean, the corny term is post-hardcore, but to me, it's all hardcore. So like, this is one of the best hardcore records ever. Definitely go check that out. And for my new ones, I got two very different records here. The first one I'm going to recommend is by a black metal artist. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. I think it's Tra, T-R-H-A. I think he does everything himself. He's been doing this for a number of years now. And the album is called, I think it's In a Gape. The reason I chose this one is because, and you'll see once you look up this band, it's the one that's easiest to pronounce album-wise. I mean, this dude he's on some other shit. Like, he made up his own language. It's on that kind of time. You know, he releases like 4 or 5 things a year in various different realms and styles of black metal. You know, some of it is extremely raw and not produced at all. Some of it is way synthier and more kind of pared down. But it's sick. Like, all of it is so good. He's one of my favorite artists to follow these days. I'm just a huge fan. And I think In a Gape is a great starting point because it's definitely black metal. It's a little bit more accessible than some of his other stuff, but it's just a cool entry point to kind of figure out whether or not his whole thing is something you're going to fuck with. So check that out and give us all yourself a listen to. And then the last one, wrap this all up. I'm going to recommend, this is like the least metal thing so far. It's a record called Good Lies by Overmono. They are a Welsh electronic duo. They do kind of like down tempo garage house music, like extremely chill. It's good stuff to throw on and allegedly smoke some weed to. People, if you're into, yeah, if you're just chiller, vibier music, if you want to just take a break from listening to Diafago and fucking Winter and Nile and all that shit, you want to just kind of slow down a little bit, throw Good Lives on. And those are my four recommendations for you, Will.
That's awesome. I want to listen to all that stuff, but now I really want to listen to Diafago and Winter and Nile. And Nile, dude. I'm just kidding. That Fugazi one is an interesting record. You're right. Overlook in this day and age where like all these 90s kind of like offbeat hardcore bands and pre-screamo, whatever you want to call them, but Fugazi definitely deserves some respect in that lineage. Absolutely, man. So that's a good one. I appreciate that, man, for all the listeners. Alexander Jones of Undeath and Sulfuric Hatred, we appreciate your time and joining us this evening. Anything else that I neglected to bring up or to plug or promote in terms of Undeath? I mean, people can follow you guys on social media and figure it out from there for the most part.
Nah, man, I think everything was pretty extensively covered. We did a good job.
All right, and if people still want a little bit more Undeath, go back and listen to our interview with Kyle from a few years ago, and eventually we'll get the other guys in here too when you guys got something down the line new going on. In a few months, man. We're looking forward to that new album. Good luck down there in Tennessee, and hopefully we'll see you out there live sooner than later, man. Thank you so much for your time, man.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much, Will.
Have a great night, brother.
You too.
Thank you very much to Alexander Jones from Undeath. Long-awaited conversation, man. I've been meaning to get him in for a minute. As I said, opening the books again here on the Heavy Hole podcast for a month or two there. I had some family stuff going on behind the scenes, helping out. I'm at a point now where we've gotten through this backlog of interviews that I had for a while, man. So again, sorry to the guests if some of that stuff, some of that information has been coming out a week or two lately, man. But that's Big Will style, fashionably late as always. Speaking of fashionably late, I got a few albums that you might be fashionably late to. Maybe you heard them, maybe not. Two bands that you're probably familiar with, in one way or another. Shout out to Ian from Extinction AD. We had the interview with him come out a few weeks ago, talking about guests who've been waiting a little while on the back burner for their interviews to come out. And I was just speaking to him the other day behind the scenes, and he was he brought up Broken Hope, the band. We were just discussing the band Broken Hope. We talk music sometimes, and this album came up. I wanted to share it with the listeners. Broken Hope's Loathing. This is an album I may have discussed this a little bit on the podcast before. I'm not sure. I recently got this beautiful cassette. Corpse Gristle Records put out this reissue of the 1997 album Loathing by Broken Hope. It was their final album on Metal Blade Records. Their last album from the original run was the album Grotesque Blessings was after this album. That was on Martyr Music, and since they've reformed, they put out two albums on Century Media. But this was their last album. Some people might say, you could arguably say that Loathing was the last album of the classic Metal Blade run. It was also the last album with, rest in peace to drummer Ryan Stanek, who was in the band from the start, or at least from the early days. And also the last album with Sean Glass, bass player, who, if I'm not mistaken, joined probably the album before that. Jeremy Wagner, rhythm guitarist, Brian Griffin, lead guitarist. Jeremy Wagner still kind of spearheading the band nowadays in modern times. Brian Griffin would stay on for one more album after this, Grotesque Blessings. But Brian Griffin on lead guitar, Jeremy Wagner on guitar, that was a very classic sound for Broken Hope. This album and Grotesque Blessing, some people might consider the last recordings of the original run, so to speak. Also the second to last album with original singer Joe Thasick, rest in peace. So there's two members, I don't know if technically you might say founding members, I don't know the history that well, but definitely two OG members of this band's original run, who've since passed away. So rest in peace to Joe Thasick and Ryan Stanek. But getting down to the music on Loathing, something that I was trying to talk about when I talk about Broken Hope to people, maybe who are just getting into them or don't know the catalog as well. They pioneered a lot of different sounds in death metal over their discography. If you listen to their early recordings, particularly Bowels of Repugnance, they were a little bit ahead of the curve, in my opinion, with how brutal death metal got in the late 90s. Joe Thasick's vocals were ahead of the curve. Even now, nowadays you hear, and I hate to admit this, but a lot of times it's the deathcore bands. But nowadays, death metal vocals have taken on a completely different caliber of depth and brutality. The people are doing literal like roars that sound like a lion or a bear or something. Things that I honestly can't do with my voice. But Joe Thasick was ahead of the curve on getting those inhuman tones out of your voice, and I don't think he gets enough credit there. But then with this album, Loathing. This album predates, this 1997, I feel like this album was the blueprint or predates in some way a lot of what people call tech death, or people reminisce on tech death being maybe 10 years ago. But this album from 97, listen to this album if you're a fan of Decrepit Birth, if you're a fan of a lot of your classic iconic Unique Leader Records bands that are tech death and display a very technical acumen. This is production style too. This is the cleanliness, I want to say, which is a weird word to describe the album, but this is like a very impeccably dusted, crisp produced album. Brian Griffin produced Broken Hope's albums at this point, and he was like known, he was pioneering for this like extremely crisp, clean digital production, and even in the 90s for death metal, that again predates a lot of what is really big now in the more technical and progressive death metal scene out there. You guys know what I'm talking about. Maybe we want to talk about bands like The Faceless. I'm trying to think of the big bands from this scene that people are really into, and unfortunately my mind's it's escaping me a little bit. Maybe even you want to talk about like a band like Entheos or something. These bands that do a lot of very, very technical and progressive death metal style music nowadays. Let's go back and listen to this Broken Hope Loathing and listen to what they were trying to do instrumentally on this album. And it's very interesting too, because this was still more or less the original lineup. Sean Glass joined on the album prior to this, but this was still the guys who did Swamped in Gore and Bowels of Repugnance really reaching out in terms of production, composition, performance, writing style, everything to what death metal would be maybe a decade later on. They were way ahead of the curve on this. I don't want to speak any more like out of school about tech death. I hope the bands I brought up maybe gave you a little frame of reference what I was talking about. But, again, that's not necessarily my field. That's not necessarily my lane. I just feel that this Broken Hope Loathing album predates a lot of that stuff, and you can get a lot from this, and maybe even be as surprised as I am in context how much this had to offer in 1997 for a style that would kind of go on to flourish, man. Anyway, check out Loathing by Broken Hope. Rest in peace to Ryan Stanek, and rest in peace to Joe Thasick. And now I'm back with another recommendation, a newer album by a classic band. This band has an interesting story and one that I'd like to elaborate on with the podcast more. I meant to say also, I'm probably going to, since I'm having this conversation by myself, well, not really with you, the listener, but by myself here in the podcast studio, I definitely want to elaborate on the discographies of Broken Hope and Pertinence from Finland, the band Pertinence, on this podcast a little bit more in the future. Right now, I want to talk about their most recent album. It would be easy for me to go to Member of Immortal Damnation right now, their classic 1992 full-length album, or Crown Waits the Immortal, their EP from 1991, and just talk about this, like, you know, fetishized old-school Finnish death metal that, you know, I obviously have a thing for. But I dove in, and I got this nice cassette edition of The Rot Within Us. They're on Extreme Music, 2023 album. This is actually their fourth full-length album since coming back in 2013. They're arguably more busy now and have been around for longer now than they were the original run that they're very revered for in a cult Finnish death metal way. And I am going to admit that I'm not an expert on their comeback four albums and EP since then, but this makes me want to dive further. So I got their most recent album, The Rot Within Us. The interesting thing about this is that they have been around since 2012 or 2013, reformed with original drummer Harry Salo and original guitarist Juha Ranikko. I know, sorry for my Finnish people, I'm butchering the names, but they've been joined by... Respectfully, I don't want to say a rotating door, but they have been joined by a number of musicians in and out of the band, doing vocals, bass, and performing second guitar duties. This album in particular featuring Tero Aalto, who has been in the band for, I believe this is his second album, and he was on the aforementioned EP with the band, so he's not necessarily a rookie in terms of Pertinence. He's doing the other guitars. And then Abeg Gautam on vocals and bass. This was, if I'm not mistaken, he's actually out of the band by now, according to Metal Archives, but he was also on their prior album to this. So they've had a few different newer, possibly younger, I want to say, musicians in and out of the band, but the classic drummer and guitarist are the guys kind of keeping this going. But what's up with the album, Will? Enough banter. So... this is, I want to say I gave it a chance. I didn't have to give it a chance. It kind of captured me right off the bat, and I've become a little bit jaded and a little bit cynical, because I'm not trying to sound pompous here, but when it comes to listening to death metal and listening to music, there's such a volume of it sometimes with this podcast and with my bands and stuff that sometimes I don't have time. You know, I have to listen to things a few times to give it a chance, right? So this Pertinence album grabbed me right off the bat. And I think one of the things is the drums have a very natural sound, very old school sound. Not old school. They don't, you know, it's not Corpse Production. They don't sound garbagey. They sound live. They don't sound triggered, which is the one, the one aspect here, right? So the drums have a very live, old-school aesthetic. They're being played by the original drummer from 1990. That's impressive to me. And the original guitarist is there. And there is something in the tone of the writing, something in the riffs. Pertinence, not necessarily known and revered for being the most mysterious or technical Finnish old school death metal band. You know, we all know the bands that are going to come into those conversations. Pertinence was a little bit more of a brutal band, kind of known for evolving from a grindcore sound to maybe more of a definitely evoking some of the melancholy and doom you might associate with that old school Finnish death metal period, but grounding it in a very less is more grindcore kind of aesthetic in certain ways. And I enjoy their older material for that. And this really doesn't stray far from that. It captures your attention. It's the writing is kind of stripped down and bare, but it's not boring. It drives your attention, and they evoke atmosphere in the right parts. They definitely remind you that they are a classic old-school Finnish death metal band with this kind of doomy, melancholic atmosphere at certain times. But they keep the production very, very four guys in the room. I don't feel like they do a lot here in the studio that they would not be able to capture live. In other words, there's not a lot of production magic here. This sounds like a real band, and there's something beautiful about it. I feel that also maybe could be attributed to the old school mentality of the band and of the original drummer and guitarist who are driving this project. So I imagine, of course, the other musicians involved, you know, would have some reverence for Pertinence as an old school band joining. These guys are, you know, younger, probably death metal musicians from the area. So this is a new album from an old band that is definitely worth a listen and worthy to be in your collection if you're someone who is already familiar with Pertinence's classic old school material. Definitely highly recommended. And I would just say, I'm looking for it on my shelf right now, but I think I loaned it out to a friend right now, looking at you, Dave Gladding. Anyway, the history of Finnish death metal book, definitely, check that out for more info on the stuff I was just talking about, man. But Pertinence's 2023 album on Extreme Music, The Rot Within Us. Tom, bring us a little bit of that magic. All right, man. So I hope I brought two nice, crusty classics for you guys tonight. I apologize for not bringing a co-host on, but thank you very much to Alexander Jones from Undeath. It's been a long time coming getting him on the show. We love Undeath. As I said before, I just feel I have fond memories of the Undeath demos, and then to watch their growth through the years, and the work they've put in has been great, so it's good to get a member of that band. Maybe we'll get the other guys in, cycled in through the years. Who knows, man? We're trying to reach back and get second and third episodes with past guests, man. It's hard because there's so many people we have to cover for the first time still. Like I always say, there's a long list here on Heavy Hole Podcast, but we're opening up the books. HeavyHolePodcast@gmail.com, and the voicemail number should be in the description wherever you're listening to this, man. We want you to participate as well. We're going to get Tom back maybe with a couple of the old voicemails and emails soon, man. Be part of the party. Whatever you want to recommend, what you like, what you don't like. Did we say something that you liked or that you didn't like? You got to correct us on something. No, that guy didn't play bass on the demo. He played bass on the EP. Big Will, you're a poser. Whatever, I don't care. Let us know what's cracking out there, man. We appreciate you guys. We're on Patreon with the bonus clips and the little episodes here and there. We try to do our thing. It's a one-size-fits-all quick price out there. All the money stays in a pot and goes to the production of this podcast and to things that we want to do in the future for the podcast to enrich it for you, the listener. That being said, I think that should cover it all. Shout out to Tom and Ian and Rick and Terrell and all my co-hosts out there, man, doing their thing, you know, hippity-hopping down Easter Lane, looking for the eggs. We got edibles in some of them. We got weed. No, I'm just allegedly in some of them. We got classic demos from the 90s and others. It's crazy, man. Appreciate all you guys, man. And I guess that's it, man. A wise man once said, another one. The back of the bone.